I was drafted to Chicago.
Yeah.
But I was drafted 31st, and we had a veteran tight end there that was a really good player in Desmond Clark.
We'll meet the Chicago offense.
Desmond Clark, Wake Forest University.
Forte the lone back, snap to cover, back on five. Tight pocket, tries to lead. Slides to his right, throws to an open man. Clark at the 35, rumbles inside the 30-yard line to the 27 of Minnesota. And there's a Bears first down.
I was only asked to do what I was good at, and I could learn all the other things. Because we had Bernard Berrien and Mohsin Mohammed and Desmond Clark. And, like, we had real dudes when I got there.
Desmond Clark, touchdown! Touchdown, Bears!
He fakes, Cutler throws, and touchdown, Bears! Desmond Clark in the end zone.
You know, he hasn't missed many games around here, so for some reason we just assume he'll always be out there playing.
And Desmond Clark, at age 32... the oldest offensive player to have a score. This is a young football team.
We take a lot of pride in that the two of us can go out there and perform well. You know, so just to be able to play with him and the, you know, the veteran and learn the stuff I can from him has been huge.
The guy last night he was telling us is becoming his go-to guy, the tight end, Desmond Clark. The fake to Jones, Grossman to the end zone. Touchdown to Desmond Clark. We talked about him in the first half as his new go-to guy. Well, it's the first time in the game he's gone to him.
Hey, that was a good play-action pass.
Bear fans, your dream is reality. Begin the migration to Miami and Super Bowl 41.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on the Score.
That's right. Des Clark is the originator of Hater Wednesday.
Man, that's a legacy. I mean, I know like the whole NFL thing is impressive and, oh, look at me, I played a pro sport. But Hater Wednesday,
yes,
had a very impressive Chicago sports radio run.
It did, and it all started because Des made the assertion of me laughing at the Twins, being like, man, you're kind of a hater. It's kind of like Hater Wednesday. And then we just started doing Hater Wednesday, and it turned out, I think it is as many great pieces of production that Chris Tannehill has done, I still have that as his number one.
The Hater Wednesday open?
It is amazing. Wow. It's so good.
I'm going to have to go back and hear that.
Well, I don't know. Considering a certain trial that's going on right now, might not want to play it.
The Menendez brothers attempt to get parole?
No, those are guys that you grew up with.
We all have our connections.
It's true. Des Clark, and I had forgotten that his best year as a pro was that 06 season. 626 receiving yards that year, averaged 14 yards a catch. Six touchdowns. He now joins us here on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. Des, how are you?
Man, I'm doing well, man. It's glad to see your face, man. It's been some years. Spiegel, we never met in person, but I pay attention to the radio when I'm back in Chicago. And I still enjoy when I'm up in Chicago tuning in to 670 to Score.
That's awesome. Thank you, Des. Very, very cool to have you. Yeah, I mean, so what do you think of when you see Lawrence? Does he still look like a hater? And it is Wednesday.
It is Hater Wednesday, right? And I forgot about that, Lawrence. I forgot about the whole Hater Wednesday thing. But, I mean, you still look the same, so you probably still got a little hater in you. But we'll see.
It's true.
He does. He does, Des. I can attest.
100%. And now Des has moved on and become a very, very strong businessman. He's figured out the way to handle post-playing life, which is always great. I always look forward to seeing guys do that. I want to ask you, because first of all, when it comes to that era of the Bears, people have so many questions. And now that I've been away from it a little bit, you've been away from it a little bit, I know that Thomas Jones never watches the Super Bowl now. That he always makes sure that – you've never seen it either?
Nope.
Why not?
I've seen clips. I tried to watch it. One time my brother called me and said, hey, man, the Super Bowl is on from when y'all play. And I turned on the NFL Network or whatever it was on, and I watched about four plays, and I couldn't watch it. Man, like that's like the most heartbreaking thing for – a football player to get there and then lose it. I can appreciate it now that I'm out of the game, but to watch myself lose the Super Bowl, I just still can't bring myself to do that.
Des, you know, the game started real well. There was a kickoff return. I mean, Every one of us thought the Bears were going to win that Super Bowl at that moment. Every single one of us. Did you guys think so?
Absolutely. I mean, you can't get a better start than that. And when that happened, it was like, okay, here we go. Here we go. We're about to do what we do. You know, the special teams, our defense is going to – and our defense started out well also. Our defense is going to go out there and shut them down, and all the offense has to do is take care of the ball, run the ball effectively, make time and plays, make plays with in good time, and we'll win this game. That's how we won 13 games that year going into the playoffs. And it seemed like it was going to be another magical night, but we know how it ended.
So after it's all said and done, and you guys have to regroup and get ready for the next couple of seasons, did mm-hmm. you think, yeah, we're definitely going to be back there? Like, what? How did you guys kind of wrap your mind around not getting that part of it done and then getting prepared for whatever was going to happen after it?
Yeah, so the interesting thing about that season in 2006 – I brought out the cameras for camp, and I started documenting everything. I got some stuff in storage where we were talking about that early in the 2006 season. And of course, we went on and lost the Super Bowl. But coming back in 2007, it was just assumed we would go on another run. I don't think any team can go to the Super Bowl and come back with practically the same team and not have that thought that, hey, even if we don't go back to the Super Bowl, we're going to go on a run. But we didn't even make the playoffs the next year.
Man, talking to Dez Clark here on 670 The Score. It's interesting, Dez. We're in a moment here where tight ends are getting a lot of conversation. So we have been talking about tight ends, and it's one of the reasons that I think we thought of you and
Lawrence
reached out.
A Dez Clark type tight end right now is a very effective player that's making a whole lot more money than what Dez made in his career.
Well, because Dez...
Yeah. First round draft pick. He's probably going to make more in his signing bonus than I made in half of my career.
So when you see Colston Loveland and hear the way that people talk about Colston Loveland, does he remind you of a young Dez Clark?
So here's where I was struggling if I was going to take the interview or not, because I haven't watched a whole lot of football, college football, over the last 3-4 years.
That's okay. That's all right. That's all right.
Hey. But I do watch the Bears, mm-hmm. and I do follow the NFL from not too far of a distance, but from a distance. So I know what's going on with the Bears, and picking up another good, solid tight end that can go with Komet, a very, very good upper echelon tight end, I believe. I mean, it takes me back to our days when it was me and Greg Olsen. And I think they could have that type of fire or even more coming into this season with the type of offense that Ben Johnson runs.
Considering that you were a tight end that had to do it all, and Greg had a specialty, and even in the intro, Greg talked about, hey, that first year, they kind of just let me do their thing. What were the important messages that were going on between the two of you and your tight ends coach at the time about what his job was and how to make everyone's life easier?
Well, for Greg, he was that tall, fast tight end that can get down the field. I mean, he ran a 4.445. And I was a guy, I could control the middle of the field. So we had our different strengths that played well to each other, right? When Greg first came into the league, he wasn't that good of a blocker. So they didn't ask him to block a lot. They wanted Greg to stretch the field. And he did a really good job at that. And I believe those first couple years, 07, 08, I think that we were used in a really effective way because it played to both of our strengths. And I think in 07 and 08, no, especially I know 08, we both had like 40 plus catch seasons if Greg didn't have even more than that. So well balanced, and they really catered to both of our strengths as a tight end.
See that, and that's where it's extremely relevant because we got Cole Kmet and Colston Loveland, who are going to work together. And we've been listening to Greg Olsen talk about it, and we're interested in how it works for the veteran when the rookie comes in and you got to figure out how to function together and who does what and if it can be comfortable in a tight end's room or if there's some rivalry. Maybe there's a little bit of both in a tight end room like that.
Yeah, man, I got the greatest compliment from Greg when they were talking about drafting a first round, second round tight end towards the end of Greg's career with Carolina. And I remember reading something that he said in the paper down there. Maybe, I don't know where I read it, I'd have seen that, but he said, I'm gonna treat this guy just like Desmond treated me. I'm not gonna give him anything. Desmond didn't give me anything. He made me work for everything, but he also taught me everything that he could to help make me a better teammate. That's the ultimate compliment. And if these two guys can coexist like that, where Cole Kmet, he doesn't see him as a threat. Like, I didn't see Greg as a threat. I was secure in my own ability and what I can do. You got to come in and prove yourself. But although you got to come in and prove yourself, I'm willing to help you be the best tight end that you can be, because I want to win freaking games. So if Cole Kmet could have that type of attitude, which I don't know him personally, everything that I've heard about him, he's a good dude. But if he goes into it with that, he's secure in his own ability, which he should be, because he's a damn good tight end, and just say, hey, this guy's going to come help this team win games. So let me help him be the best tight end possible. Then that's the best relationship that you can have. But Cole Kmet shouldn't bow down and think, okay, since he's a first rounder, they're just going to come in and play him. No, he got to earn everything that he gets.
I've been trying to kind of game out how the Bears offense under Ben Johnson looks. And I'm honestly, Des, kind of excited about this, because I feel like Rome Odunze is very talented. We know DJ Moore is good. And then you have Cole Kmet, and I keep thinking about like a strong side formation that Loveland then motions into, and then the type of matchup that might leave. It might leave DJ Moore one-on-one, which is exactly what you want. When you start thinking about how tight ends like Loveland with the rest of the Bears offense intact, what type of matchup problems could they then make for defenses?
Oh, man, I just go back to what Greg was able to do. He was a matchup nightmare for it. I mean, he was too big for safeties, and he was too big, and he was too fast for linebackers. So if Loveland could be that type of tight end and command that type of attention, it's only going to take pressure off of DJ Moore. It's only going to help Rome be a better receiver, because there's going to be more space. And as you guys know, if you got – two good tight ends that can control the middle of the field, and our receivers can work the outside and work the numbers and work outside of the hash and not get double teamed and have an extra safety over the top. We have a few good wide receivers, and I'm excited to see what they can do. I was excited last year to see what they can do on the offensive side of the ball. And now with an upgraded offensive line, more firepower at the tight end position. I mean, DJ Moore may have his best year yet, and he's had a couple good years with the Chicago Bears.
The way you just described the linebacker matchups and the safety matchups for the tight end is still exactly the way that it works. It's what you want the tight end to do, is to create that mismatch. Does it make sense to you, Des? I was told this, that Ben Johnson can't run his offense without a tight end like Colston Loveland. And that's the guy who creates the matchup problems. He needs that guy to run just about everything else in his offense. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, so the tight end position is, outside of the quarterback and maybe the center, it's probably the most unique position on the football field, because we have to know all of the blocking assignments. We got to know all of the receiving assignments, all of the conversions, and we got to know what the fullback has to do and from that position. So that's a chess piece that you can move around in so many different places to dictate to the defense, hey, you gotta line up to us. And once a good coach can see, all right, now that we're moving our chess pieces, when I'm talking about the tight ends, around in certain situations, and they find a crack in the defense that they can exploit, man, that's gold to have as a good play caller, to have a good tight end that you can split out wide, bring in the slot. Two tight end sides, put both tight ends on the same side, two receivers on the other side, see what type of matchup you get there. Tight ends on the end of the line, both tight ends out wide. When you have that type of flexibility with the tight end position, it's just unlimited the things you could create as far as matchups.
How would you advise Loveland to approach being a tight end that can do everything? Clearly, he's got the ability to be a guy that can kind of act like a wide receiver, but you talking about the blocking aspect of it and kind of being an offensive lineman, how difficult mm-hmm. is that, and how would you advise him on learning all of those things to make himself a complete tight end?
Yeah, when it comes to blocking, I learned from Shannon Sharp, and he was an undersized tight end, right? So he knew all the tricks of the trade to cut off defensive ends and to get angles. And I believe that's the most important part to being an undersized tight end. Like I was playing at 252 pounds, barely only 6'3". And, you know, I wasn't ripped up or nothing like that. Learn angles, learn leverage, because as a small – and he's taller too, so – It's probably going to be even a little bit harder for him.
He's got to learn some bend a little bit in some of those situations.
Right. And he has to learn angles. The thing that I thought that I was really, really good at was getting on hips and pushing hips and understanding how to influence defensive ends by taking that first step. Because they're reading your steps. If you take a step in, you know, they're taught that they got to take a certain step to man their gaps, right? So you can influence defensive ends and linebackers a certain way just with your movements. So instead of me trying to do it with brute strength, which I knew I wasn't going to outpower anybody, I did it more with my movements, influencing them to do one thing, and then I take advantage of it once I get them to move the way that I need them to move. So learning those little tricks of the trade, having great footwork, learn how to influence the movements of the defense, and then taking advantage of it when they move how you want them to move with the angles. That's the things that he will have to learn to be an effective undersized run blocker.
I'm so glad you said yes to the interview, because this has been phenomenal stuff about tight end usage and making our listeners smarter about what this season is going to be like. You know, Des, we have Patrick Manley on very often during football yeah. season. You know Pat, the long snapper.
Hey, Pat.
Yeah, maybe if Pat's not around, you could fill in for him. You've done that before, right?
Let me tell you why I don't take a lot of interviews anymore. Is because I love talking football, but I had to have – one of the things that you guys said to me on the open was – he has transitioned into a competent business person, right?
That's what Lawrence said, yes.
So I intentionally stopped talking football for a few years. You guys haven't heard me do many interviews at all over the last 3 or 4 years. It's because I wanted people to transition with me into the business world and not just only look at me as a football player. So that's been intentional. But I think – and the fact that I needed to learn a lot on this side – of the world, what I call the real world. But now that I kind of understand what I'm doing, I can do more of this now. But filling in for you guys at the last time I filled in for Pat Manley, it didn't go so well. I don't know if I want to do that again and put myself in that position.
But you said to
fill in for Pat Manley and throw the ball over the holder's head.
You said you wanted another crack at it, though. That's the thing, Des. You said at the time you wanted another chance, but Pat got healthy and took away your second chance.
I said that out of pride. I said that because I was trying to cover my ass and act like I was confident in what I was doing.
Understand.
And right now, I don't have to do that. Hell no. I don't want to have to come back Pat Manley up in anything, because the dude is too good at what he does. And somebody trying to come in and fill in for him, good luck.
Des, this was an absolute pleasure, man. Thank you so much for doing it and saying yes. And we're going to hit you up again, okay?
Absolutely, man. I appreciate you guys.